What is up, everybody? This is Kiona and Mike here with Renegade Pop Culture, and we are just doing kind of a just chatting animation arcade mix-up show. We're going to be talking about some New York Comic Con topics, and we're going to also be talking about the Mario movie trailer, the CGI movie, not the old 1991 whatever that was movie. And of course, some gaming topics, which I brought with me. So just to throw that in there. So hi, Mike, how are you doing?
I'm doing all right so far. We figured because the Mario trailer was one of the biggest topics to come from this weekend, we had to topic, jump on and talk about it.
Yeah. It's big time, man. Like, you got Jack Black up there doing his best Macho Man Randy Savage as Bowser impression. I mean, that was cool. I saw a little bit of that on the IGN stream when they were doing reactions. So let's start off with our thoughts on the Mario movie trailer. Mike, what did you think? Very highly anticipated trailer.
Well, first things first, the animation looks great. I've been generally a fan of Illumination's output, but I've always wanted them to kind of push the envelope in terms of their visual aesthetics. And
yeah, definitely.
I think this is the opportunity for the studio, with the help of Miyamoto as a co-producer, to really take things, you know, as far as they can go.
I enjoyed the Nintendo video where everybody was like, Miyamoto-san, and he's like, Chris-san, take it away. Thank you, Jackson. That was pretty awesome.
Oh yeah. And the way it kicks off with Bowser's ship like coming in, pretty much like the Star Destroyer.
Oh my god, Bowser's ship is like that entire level just put on like a ship or a mech or whatever that was. It's just his entire lava level. That was cool. I'm mostly an old school Mario person. Like I don't think, wait, no, I have played Mario 64 way back in the day. I didn't really have a Nintendo 64. I was more of a PlayStation / Saturn, RIP Saturn, because that really didn't go well for them. But I was mostly like a Sega Sony person growing up. So even though I love Nintendo, I respect Nintendo because without them, we wouldn't have anything. But anyway. Yeah, I liked the little face-off that he had with like all the penguin guys. Like that was pretty cool. Like the Penguin King dude was awesome. Like he was just like, this is but a fraction of our power. You know?
Fun fact, that Penguin King is voiced by Kerry Payton, who many people know as the voice of Cyborg from Teen Titans.
Of course it was Kerry Payton. My God, that guy, I was half expecting a booyah. I know that's kind of out of the, a lot of DCEU fans don't like the booyah, but I do. It was a Cyborg, man. That was awesome. Well, you know, so in terms of the animation, like Illumination, I understand, I haven't looked too deep into this, but I understand that you and Cameron have often talked about this on animation, where Illumination apparently has kind of a reputation. I don't know if that's, you know, if that's accurate or not, but can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Fairly or not. Many, many fans are highly critical of Illumination's house style, both like their animation and also just, you know, the like the usual sense of humor from these films. There's a lot of people who kind of like dismiss them as sort of like lowbrow entertainment compared to the likes of like Pixar or Disney proper. I've never really agreed with that consensus. I've always thought these movies were at the very least mildly entertaining. Yeah. Some of them are great. Like I love the two Sing movies, and Despicable Me 2 is one of my favorite comedies. But I also can see to some extent where some people are coming from. Despicable Me 3 is not great. I enjoyed the first Secret Life of Pets, and the second one has like cool moments. Harrison Ford plays this plays this, I think, like Hound, or I forget exactly who he played, but he was like perfectly cast for that role. The rest of the movie was fine.
How do you hook Harrison Ford into doing a voiceover role like that? That's pretty good, I would think.
I don't know, but it's got to be a good role for Harrison Ford to be like, yeah, all right, I'll do this.
He just comes in there and goes like, yeah, what am I talking about today? So yeah, Secret Life of Pets, you know, that was pretty good, I think. And that was like a charming movie. You know, that's the thing that I think the Illumination movies have, is they have some charm to them. Maybe not all of them, but I would say like you said, Despicable Me 2, Secret Life of Pets 1. I think this movie has some charm to it. It looks like it.
Yeah, the only Illumination movie I genuinely dislike is The Lorax, but that's because The Lorax is a very special. It's one of Dr. Seuss's more anti-capitalist books, and Illumination handled the source material is like very antithetical.
Mm.
So yeah. that's why that one kind of rubs me the wrong way. But everything else is either fine, I guess, to, you know, genuinely great. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I have a lot of hopes for this movie for a couple of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, the directors, Aaron Horvath and Michael Jelinek.
Mm-hmm.
They worked on the last movie they did was Teen Titans Go to the Movies.
Which is another
great comedy.
I know his name because I've seen him in like Teen Titans and like some of the DC animated stuff I've seen.
Yeah, he
that have been done by him or directed by him.
He's done like a lot of episodes. Like he developed Teen Titans Go, and he's worked like he's been in the business working on shows like The Buzz on Maggie. He was a lead storyboard artist on the Drawn Together movie.
Wow.
And he also worked on Elf, Buddy's Musical Christmas. So there's some pedigree there.
Yeah. And Horvath, I think, yeah, like you said, I've mostly seen him in like Teen Titans Go to the Movies and that sort of thing.
Yeah, and like you said, Michael Jelinek has been like deeply involved in like DC properties. He did the Batman versus Dracula.
Yes.
He wrote the story for Wonder Woman.
Oh, that's cool. That was good.
He did the two Adam West animated movies, Return of the Caped Crusaders Batman versus Two-Face.
Yeah. Oh yeah, he's good. So, yep. And then you had two reasons.
The second reason is aside from Chris Pratt, we'll get to him in a second. Some of the other voice actors, I think, really brought their A game. We only heard like a second of Charlie Day's Luigi, but I can already tell he's perfectly cast.
Yeah, agreed.
Jack Black nailed it as Bowser. Keegan-Michael Key as Toad is another one who's perfect.
That's perfect. That's really good casting.
And here's a deep cut. So Sebastian Maniscalco is playing Foreman Spike, who is a villain from The Wrecking Crew.
Nice.
I never thought we'd get a Wrecking Crew reference in the first Mario movie.
Who would have thought? Yeah. I think, you know what struck me as a little bit weird about this trailer, apart from what we're going to talk about with Chris Pratt, but I think the music, I'm not used to hearing a trailer music version of the Mario theme.
Yeah, it surprisingly works. It's not something you immediately think of,
mm-hmm.
but the arrangement, I thought it made the movie feel epic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. What did you think of Mario's entrance into the Mushroom Kingdom, at least as far as we saw in the trailer?
The entrance is interesting. I still don't know much about what the actual story is, but
yeah.
It is a little bit jarring to see him just kind of like plop right into Mushroom Kingdom.
Yeah. You know, I thought it's kind of interesting to think of the possibilities of where he might come from. Like, did he go through a warp pipe, or did Toad bring him there? Which is probably the case, because Toad usually would run to Mario or something or try to grab him and pull him into the Mushroom Kingdom or whatever. If it was a warp pipe kind of a thing, then where's Luigi?
Good question. You'd think they'd go in together, or maybe they got separated.
Maybe they got separated. Yeah. But it's interesting to note too, like when IGN was kind of reacting to the trailer and stuff, they mentioned something kind of interesting, which I didn't notice at first, which was that the mushrooms themselves kind of have a sort of velvety sort of look to them, almost like they're pillowy kind of a texture, which is interesting. Yeah. Like, I don't know. I don't know if that means anything, but you know, it could, depending on where they go with this story. It already feels like the most faithful film adaptation of the Mario Brothers universe that we've seen.
Yeah. A couple days ago, there are some images from the movie that got leaked. One of them was the first image of Mario.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw people saying, like, you know, something about this doesn't look quite right. And honestly, to me, when I saw that image, I'd like, it looks like Mario. Like, yeah,
it does.
Like, there are certain features that are maybe a little bit off model. Like, the eyes are kind of closer together than the normal.
Yeah.
And his teeth may not be like as pronounced, but
yeah.
If I can tell from an image that is the character, then I don't really see the issue.
If you want to talk about teeth, freaky looking teeth, how about Toad with teeth? Like, there was one still. There was a still image of Toad where he's like, he's making a face at Mario or something when he's telling him not to eat the blue mushroom, and it's just Toad with teeth, and it just freaked me out, man. It's one of the funniest things I've seen all day. But yeah, I think it looks accurate. Like, it seems like the game, you know, come to CGI life. You know what I mean? It's like they did a way better job than the movie did.
Honestly, I don't think the movie even tried.
I don't think so either.
Like,
much as I love Cyberpunk, it's, you know, Cyberpunk Mario Brothers, not really a thing.
Those aesthetics are too dissonant.
Yes, yeah, definitely. So I don't know. I think for me, this just seems like it's pretty spot on, especially when you look at, like, you know, Bowser's ship and just the Mushroom Kingdom itself just looks really cool.
Yeah. Now, speaking of dissonance, we need to address the Chris Pratt in the room.
The mushroom in the room.
Now, to be fair, we only heard like two lines from him. So yeah. That's not really enough to gauge like the most accurate judgment, but
yeah,
still based on what I heard, he definitely comes across as the weakest link.
I'd say so. At this point, I don't really know what to expect. I was hoping he wouldn't try to outdo Charles Martinet, or Martinet, however you say his name. You know, I was hoping that he wouldn't like try to do an impression of him or what have you, because I don't know if you could sustain that through a whole movie, but maybe you could. I'm just not sure where I stand on it right now. Like, for me, it was okay. You know, for the two lines that we heard in the trailer, it was okay.
Yeah, like he's not bad, but this is honestly the first time that I've actually thought that Chris Pratt is, and I don't use this term often, but miscast. Not necessarily because he's not Italian. It's just like Mario isn't quite the everyman character that Emmett is from the Lego Movie, or even his character from Parks and Recs. Mario has a little bit more personality, even if it is mostly just in the voice. Mm-hmm. And I know Charles Martinet is a good actor, because he has albeit a small role, but he voices a character in Dragon Ball Super Superhero, so mm-hmm. I know he has the range, like,
oh yeah.
Now I don't know if like the Mario voice can carry a full feature film.
Yeah.
But at least if he was cast, like, it's throwing a bone to video game fans and people who want to see professional voice actors succeeding in Hollywood.
Yes, agreed. I think it does lose a little something, because you don't get that feeling of like, oh, this is a Mario movie, you know, just by hearing his voice.
Right.
It leaves a lot to the, you know, the other elements are going to have to carry it, because Mario just doesn't sound like Mario. Looks like Mario, mostly.
Mostly, yeah.
But I think that's the weakest element of the movie, like you said. And I think that that's probably going to be the thing that mostly takes me out of it.
And it wouldn't be as noticeable if everyone else wasn't like acting circles around him.
Exactly.
And again, we're just talking about the trailer, but
yeah, just very limited sample. But you know, Bowser, Jack Black, you know, Jack Black is the kind of actor who will just throw himself into a role and just try to find that, you know, like this is exactly who Bowser is to him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's just gonna, you know, like you said, he's gonna act circles around Chris Pratt. And it's, you know, Chris Pratt can act, he's a good actor, like we see it, but it's just, yeah, I feel like this is not really doing the character of Mario justice. Maybe I could be totally wrong.
Yeah, there's the movie comes out in April, mm-hmm. April 7th, 2023. So there is plenty of time for him and the movie itself to prove us all wrong.
Yeah.
But these are just our first impressions.
Yeah, just impressions, really. But it's like, I don't know what I was expecting from him, to be honest. Like, I was just hoping that, you know, it would be good enough to just get through the film. But it is kind of sad to say that, because, you know, you got a guy like Charles Martinet and who just embodies that so well with his voice, you know, the you can say what you want about it being cutesy or cartoony or what have you, like the cartoony Italian accent. But I mean, there's just so much personality there. Whereas with Chris Pratt, and as far as we know, you know, apart from the little bit of Brooklyn, New York accent that he tried to put on at the end there and the second line, at least he tried something, but I don't know.
Now, before we leave this topic, there is some good news. Martinet actually is in the film, mm-hmm. in some uncredited role.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a good chance that he either gets to play Mario in like just kind of the smallest capacity. There's a comment on my Facebook where someone suspected like they kind of did something like the Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers movie where like the Mario voice is kind of just like, you know, a character choice. And then when he's off like doing his real adventure, that's when he's like actually Chris Pratt.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I don't know if I particularly want that to be the case, but as long as you get like the main man in there somewhere, I'll be satisfied.
Oh, so it might be like a framing device kind of a thing.
Maybe. Who knows?
They could go in that direction, yeah.
It'll certainly be interesting.
It will be, yeah. I mean, I'm curious to see like where the story goes in terms of, is this Mario's first time that he's been to the Mushroom Kingdom? It sure seems like it. So is this kind of a prequel to the games of sorts, or?
Honestly, I'd be okay with that. Yeah. Remember, this is a Nintendo co-production. So yeah. they care about this movie almost as much, if not more, than the fans.
They care about it as much as they didn't care about that old live action movie.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of fascinating though, going back and looking at all the like the YouTube documentaries and behind the scenes things that people have put together about the Mario movie. Like it's kind of interesting and fascinating to see how that movie sort of almost didn't come together. You know, there was so much behind the scenes stuff happening.
Yeah. The fact that we even got that movie at all is kind of a miracle. Like it all just kind of feels like it was held together by like scotch tape.
Yeah, it really was. It really was. What a mess of a film. Oh my goodness. But you know, thankfully this looks a lot better. Even if it's just like Chris Pratt just basically using his own voice and not giving us like a Mario voice necessarily. I mean, it's still going to be better than the old live action movie, I think.
Oh, easily.
But there is one interesting thing that some people noticed about the logo, which is that the Super Mario Brothers movie logo, the super and then movie, looks just like the same lettering and font type as the old live action movie.
So they haven't completely distanced themselves from the past.
It's just strange. It's like such a strange choice. I'm almost thinking like, is that like Nintendo just purposely like flipping the bird at the, that, you know, at the old movie team? I don't know. I mean, like this is our movie now, you know? But the Mario Brothers logo itself, like, what do you think of it? Do you think it fits, or do you think they should have gone with something a little closer to like the game logos or something? I mean, I think it's pretty close.
I like the Mario Brothers logo. I like that, how it's like colorful. It really kind of like it's attention grabbing. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what they need for especially this first trailer. Like there will probably be like at least two or three different variations of the title logo by the time we get to the finished product. But for now, I'm into it.
Yeah, same here. Okay, so did we say everything that we wanted to say about the Mario movie trailer so far, or?
I feel like we got everything out there. Even Cameron and I kind of talked about it briefly. He and I kind of have similar strengths and weaknesses. I think he really liked Keegan-Michael Key and Jack yeah. Black's voiceover performances. One thing he kind of pointed out was that the comic relief is very Nintendo-esque.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Throwing those little snowballs at Bowser.
Love that.
I love that so much.
And then the ice cube that like hits one of the Koopas.
The ice cube that kills one of them. just KOs the guy. That was their one hit through that whole thing. They just pelted them with snowballs. Man.
The last comment I have to say before we move on. My ultimate hope is that this movie does for Illumination what the Peanuts movie did for Blue Sky Studio. And these are kind of two similar situations where for the Peanuts movie, the Schultz family was like heavily involved as like executive producers. And that's kind of the same deal here with Miyamoto, like really working hand in hand with Chris Melandrini.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope that it results in a faithful and well put together adaptation. So far it looks promising. I would say that I like it overall. For a first trailer, it's good. It's good. The hype levels are up there. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Let me see. What else do we have going on? You want to go to one of your NYCC topics real quick?
Yeah. So another topic that we have, I just found out like literally seconds before we hit record that The Legend of Vox Machina got renewed for a third season.
A third season. Wow.
Yeah. So season two had already been greenlit once.
Yeah.
Once season one was put into production, but I guess,
I
guess enough people have been tuning in that
they got
the go ahead for season three.
I really like it. I love it. The same team should go and do like Rat Queens, do an adaptation of that because it really reminds me of that. My God,
that would be awesome.
Yeah. Can you imagine that?
I would.
It's kind of a similar vibe, though. So I don't know if they would do it, but you know, man can dream. For me, on my side, it's an interesting thing. Like, I'm gonna kind of bring it over to video games real quick. So we had a lot of updates from CD Projekt Red, who are the developers behind Cyberpunk 2077 and The Witcher games, and they are planning like three or four more Witcher games that are coming out. Like there's The Witcher 4, there's a spinoff, there's like a multiplayer sort of spinoff as well, which is excellent news for all you Witcher fans out there. I'm kind of a casual Witcher guy. Like I saw the first season of the Netflix show and I liked it all right. I thought it was pretty good. The games themselves, I haven't really played through all of them, but I liked what I played. The big news for me though was the fact that we're getting a Cyberpunk sequel.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting because I really thought like, man, when that game first came out, that was a hard game to get through for me personally because of all the, you know, the glitches and stuff, just weird things that were happening. And just today, you know, I was playing through a little bit of it just today, and there was this funny glitch that happened where there's like in the afterlife bar, which you do see in Edgerunners, you know, that kind of bar with all the where all the fixers hang out and all the like all the mercs hang out. And so I went in there, and there was a character that I had saved in one of the gigs that happens, one of the like little patrol missions that happens as you're going through the world. And he was sitting there at this table. And he kind of went like, hey, V, you know, he kind of waved me over, right? And the funny thing was there were two people that were already sitting at the table. So it looked like he was glitching through one of them. He was clipping through one of the other characters, and he was like sitting on their lap is how it looked. And the funny thing was these other characters were both twins. So I don't know if it glitched out twice or something, but anyway, he was sitting there and he was talking to me. And I go over there, my character sits down and actually clips through the other person. So it was hilarious, man. That was like one of the funniest glitches I've ever seen. Kind of like the two-headed people talking to each other.
I need to find like a compilation on YouTube of like,
oh my God,
all of the like the most ridiculous Cyberpunk glitches.
Yeah, there's one that's super funny, and there's another one for Mass Effect Andromeda that's super funny as well. Like, that one just made me laugh so hard with all the walking glitches and everything. Like, it's so hilarious. So, yeah, I mean, Cyberpunk, you know, it's still got its share of little bugs that happen, but it's a much, much improved experience over playing it at launch. which I know didn't bother some people, but for me, it kind of bothered me a little bit. Like it knocked it down a couple notches, even though I really did like the story and I love the characters and stuff. So it's nice revisiting it though. And it's cool that we still have the infinite money glitch. Don't fix that. Don't fix that, CD Projekt Red. But anyway, it's exciting, you know, to see that the sequel is going to be developed by a new development team that they have based out of Boston, I believe.
Oh, nice.
So they're going to have some of the developers also from the Polish studio they're going to come down and help out with the development of the sequel as well. So hopefully that'll be good and take off some of the workload from their main dev squad, you know.
And hopefully they're not like pressed for time either, because
yeah, they should let this one cook a little bit longer, you know, like give Keanu Reeves some downtime.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
What's like the usual turnaround between like installments of a major franchise, like 2 to 3 years?
If it's a triple A title, I mean, it can go a couple years to maybe like 3, 4, 5 years, even depending on. I know that they try to get it out the door as quickly as possible now, but like if you ask me, if they wanted to take like 4 years between, you know, from now, I wouldn't mind it so much, because at least you know that it'll have time to like to percolate a little bit and to kind of sit there and just, you know, let's make sure the game comes out in a stable state, especially they're going to be using Unreal Engine 5, and it should be good. It should be good. I'm really hoping that
we'll have to wait and see.
I'm hoping we don't have another 2077 situation. Like, I would have waited. Let me just tell you that. I would have waited for them to actually make sure that it releases in a non-buggy state. Nonetheless, though, with all that said, it's really cool to see that they're continuing with the franchise. I love that world. You know, I love cyberpunk. You know me. It's my favorite subgenre of science fiction and fantasy. So I hope that, and I expect that they will do a much better job with the second one. So
yeah, I'm sure this time they've learned all of the lessons from the previous.
If it had come out in the state that it's in now, I think people would have been much more forgiving, because it's a much improved game now. And of course, you know, you got ray tracing and everything, makes everything look super nice and shiny. So
oh, of course.
Which is what we want in a cyberpunk world. Everything should be nice and shiny and chrome. All right, what's up next?
Next, so do you remember when the like the adult animated series Velma was announced?
Yes. Yeah.
So they have a trailer for the series that premiered today, and it looks great.
I have to see that. I didn't see it yet. Okay. All right.
They also put out some character posters for the series. Mindy Kaling as Velma Dinkley.
Perfect. Good casting there.
And then you have Sam Richardson as Norville, which is Shaggy's birth name. Constance Wu as Daphne.
Okay.
And then for Fred, we have Glenn Howerton.
Interesting. All right. Yeah, I see it.
And then some of the other voice cast, like guest stars, include Jane Lynch, Wanda Sykes, Weird Al Yankovic, Russell Peters, Melissa Fumero, Stephen Root, Gary Cole, nice. Ming-Na Wen, Ken Leung, Cherry Jones, Frank Welker.
Of course. I was waiting for that.
Fortune Famester, Yvonne Orji, Sarah Yu Blue, Nicole Byer, Shane Mitchell, Debbie Ryan, Kulap Vilasek, and Carl Anthony Towns.
Wow. So
yeah.
Good cast. Jeez.
Yeah, this is a really star-studded cast. A
lot of comedic energy there. I like it. Should be good. Velma's having her day in the spotlight, which I like.
Yeah. she was just confirmed to be a lesbian in the most recent direct-to-video movie called Trick or Treat Scooby-Doo, which Cam and I will be talking about when animation returns. And there's no release, like, official release date yet for Velma. It just says coming in 2023 to HBO Max.
I'm just glad it survived the axe.
Right?
Because I would have thought, man, if there was a series that he was going to axe, I would have thought it would be that. But thankfully, no. Thankfully, no.
Yeah, I'm
still mad about that Batgirl situation, by the way. I'm still upset about it.
Yeah.
Not over it.
At least Blue Beetle is up there,
yeah,
in the ranks.
That's true. Well, we had a little thing come up with Sony, who have been, you know, pestering Microsoft about their Activision acquisition because they're scared of losing Call of Duty.
Of course.
Even though they have like an exclusivity thing with the next Call of Duty, which is so weird to me. Anyway, Sony, get your ducks in a row. But I think it's interesting that they're really pushing live service multiplayer experiences right now. Like there's a lot of talk about a lot of their new studios that they've acquired are going to be working on, you know, stuff that's more like a Destiny kind of live service sort of thing, which doesn't fill me with a lot of excitement because I've seen a lot of live services just go the way of the dodo and not really do much in terms of gaining traction. Babylon's Fall being the latest. Sad to see Platinum get such a, you know, black mark on their reputation there. But I think in terms of what Sony is doing, as long as they don't fully give up, you know, AAA single player experiences, I think they'll be fine. Your stuff like your Horizon Zero Dawns and your Horizon, you know, sequels and all that stuff, like they got to keep that going, which I'm sure that they will. Uncharted, of course, you know, whatever they decide to do with the next installment of that. And, you know, we have The Last of Us, which is possibly going to get a part 3 in the future. I don't know. I mean, it's sold, you know, Last of Us 2 sold well enough. So we'll probably get a part 3. I don't even know what it's going to be about. And I hope they should just do something different if they do that. But they are getting we know for a fact that they're getting a standalone multiplayer game set in the Last of Us universe. So that's going to be interesting to see. I'm not really one for multiplayer, especially in that kind of world. So for me, it doesn't really add up to much, but you know, I'll keep an eye on it and see if it's something that I might want to check out. Other than that, you know, they're saying that they're probably going to acquire more studios, more small studios, and bring them into the PlayStation ecosystem. I hope that Spider-Man 2 comes out and is really good. That's all I can say about that.
That one does seem like the biggest title that they have right now.
That's the biggest long-term title. I think the biggest one coming up is going to be God of War Ragnarok. So,
oh yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's going to be pretty awesome to play through. Still got to finish the first one. My God, I think my save got corrupted.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, my save got corrupted way back when I was still using my PS4 and so and had to upgrade to a PS4 Pro and somehow it didn't migrate correctly. So, well, I guess that's it. Yeah, I mean, that's all that I kind of wanted to talk about in terms of the gaming news stuff. So do you have anything else from Comic-Con?
I mean, if you're an Owl House fan, they had their season 3 panel.
Nice.
Earlier today. They got to watch the first 6 minutes of the first special. It really does suck what happened to that show. It got, for those that don't know, Disney cut their budget for the third season. So instead of a full 20 plus episode order, it's been reduced to 3 45-minute specials, which.
Really?
Yeah, it does kind of suck, especially because the show has been like so critically appraised that like critics love it, audiences love it. Like it's a great vessel for representation for the LGBT community. And and yet due to like the pandemic, a lot of shows at Disney Animation kind of suffered, and this was one of the casualties.
Oh, that sucks. I'm sorry to hear that, but at least they got the at least they have something for season three.
Yeah, at least they have some closure. And from everything that I've heard about these last couple episodes, that it's like some of the best material that they've done. Like, I know a lot of people on the crew who are really excited to show off what they've been working on.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm really glad to hear that. I haven't seen the show still. I need to get on that because it sounds like something that I would really be into.
Yes, you should definitely get on that.
Yeah.
I've been saying the same thing to Brock, and eventually down the line that will be one of our fresh tanks.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah.
Let's do it. we'll cross that bridge when we get there.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so some non-video game topics that I wanted to talk to you about. Did you see the latest She-Hulk episode?
I did, and I am very happy.
You know, I gotta say, as someone who has been kind of cooling off on the show lately, I think that that was one of the better episodes of the show, if not my favorite episode of the show, apart from the first pilot.
I am not going to give all of the credit to Charlie Cox, even though he is like absolutely delightful coming back as Daredevil. But what this episode had that, and I have enjoyed pretty much the entire season, but what I think this episode had is the perfect balance between the comedy and the drama. They really did just knock it out of the park, with even with the frivolous lawsuit with Leapfrog of all characters.
Oh dear.
But like, yeah. so many people were worried that the MCU would ruin Daredevil, and yet he seems just like the character to me.
I mean, I don't think that they're ever going to ruin any of those characters, because if you are bringing the established actor in, you know, I mean, the worst that we're going to get is like that weird thing that they did with Fisk in Hawkeye, which I'll admit that was underwhelming.
The problem just is like he came in kind of at the last second.
Yeah, that was more the writing of the show and less like the actor, you know, less D'Onofrio coming in and just phoning it in. Like, he didn't do it. You could tell that he was trying to play Fisk as Fisk, but it was just like the writing and the weird staging of everything. It just seemed off. But that whole show seemed off to me. So I don't know. For me personally, Hawkeye was not a highlight of the MCU by far. Which is sad, because I love the characters. I love the Hawkeye characters. But this show, for me personally, has been kind of a mixed bag. I really liked the earlier episodes, and then I haven't really liked the middle portion of the show, like the fifth, sixth, and seventh episodes. Didn't really care for those too much.
It does kind of veer away from like the traditional courtroom stuff and gets more into...
Yeah.
I guess like side quests with Jen, yeah, but
kind of odd.
But at least the show is still kind of developing Jennifer as a character, as opposed to just doing like something very one dimensional.
Yeah, I mean, they are trying to throw in some complexity, which I do like. I think for me, She-Hulk would be like a 6.5 show at this point. But let's see what happens with next week's. I will say, for, you know, like for Charlie Cox and stuff, like, he comes in and he plays Daredevil because he knows the character like the back of his hand.
Exactly.
He went through three seasons of Netflix, of the Netflix show. You know, like, I think it was weird that there's no mention of, like, I'm curious to see where he's at in terms of, like, is there a Foggy? Is there Karen Page? What are we going to do with Karen Page? I mean, with Born Again, I mean, are they really going to go that deep into that storyline? I mean, I don't know. Oh, God.
Good question. I'm pretty sure we are going to see Foggy and Karen in Born Again. Like, the show doesn't even premiere until 2024.
True.
So that means like,
gives them a lot of time.
Yeah. I don't think cameras are even like close to rolling.
Yeah.
So there's plenty of time for, say, like next year or something, we get like the full cast list and it has like all of the people back.
I hope it has them back. I mean, seriously, I'm so, you know, like, it's so close. If it's not the same version of the characters, it's so close to being the same version. Like, okay, aside from that, though, I was happy to see a competently handled action sequence in last night's episode. The Daredevil sequence was pretty damn sweet.
That was the moment where I said, like, okay, I am no longer worried, if I even ever was, about how they're going to handle his own series. I think they've really got a handle for what they want to do with this character.
And then the other cool bit was them in the courtroom. Like, that was actual, you know, they were actually presenting a case,
mm-hmm.
which I thought was really well done. If they just let this show be a courtroom show with She-Hulk, if they hewed a little bit closer to that, I think I would like it a lot more.
I don't disagree. Like, there's nothing wrong with the show being a comedy. That's just like, that's ingrained in Jen's history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think the show just would have been better received if there was more of a balance.
I think so. Like, Leapfrog was kind of wacky and not really my thing, but I enjoyed the stuff around it. And I enjoyed having, you know, Daredevil just kind of come in there. And even though he's a more lighthearted Daredevil, but he still brings some gravitas to it. And it just comes down in the way that Charlie Cox plays him, I think.
He's just so charming.
Yeah. Yeah. He's excellent. And that fourth wall break where she asked the audience if we felt it too. It's like, yeah, we kind of did, Jen. Yeah.
They know what's up.
Yeah, they know. what did you think of the ending, though?
I have some concerns.
Yeah.
I have some concerns. This is tough because these MCU shows have had a bad rap for kind of dropping the ball with the finales. I'm praying that they deliver.
Me too,
because, you know, this is all good stuff, and, you know, I'm glad that there's some stakes, some like really high stakes for Jen, something that's even kind of been foreshadowed at the start of the show. With Bruce's whole, like, you know, the second you become a Hulk, you're like, you have a target put on your back. And they've really been like leaning into that, as well as, you know, the positive sides of Jen having like the strength of She-Hulk.
I hope that they pay off the mystery of who's actually trying to collect her blood.
Same. I also hope like we actually get to see Josh get some sort of comeuppance.
Yes, he seriously needs it. My God, the first time I saw that dude, I was like, this is so suspicious. Like, this is too good to be true here. That this one guy that just happens to, you know, like, you can kind of tell. They telegraphed it a little bit.
I wonder if even Todd is involved in Intelligentsia.
Yeah, I get that feeling too.
Or maybe he's just a red herring, like he's like too obvious as like a member.
He is pretty obvious. I mean, I haven't really gotten to talk too much about this show, so I will say that I really love Tim Roth. I'm glad that he was back. I'm glad that he was on the show and that he kind of you know, last week, I didn't really care for last week's episode all that much, but I did love him. He's always fun. And I will say that, like, you know, her friend, like her, the office employees and stuff, like Mallory Book and Pug and her
and
friend.
And Nikki.
Yeah. She's really good. So.
Yeah. We'll do a full Capes episode on this and the upcoming Werewolf by Night, which honestly is
that
my most
awesome. I'm so excited to watch that. Werewolf by Night sounds really good.
Looks really good. Honestly, more so than Wakanda Forever.
Really?
Werewolf by Night is my most anticipated.
Really? More than Wakanda Forever? Oh,
I wouldn't have thought that. I think it's the horror of it all, and the fact that Michael Giacchino is making his directorial debut.
That's really cool, and I hope that they keep all the little like imperfections in the film and stuff, like you know all those little glitchy things. I hope that they really go old school horror with it. That would be cool. Yeah, you want to talk a little bit about that Wakanda Forever trailer, because that was pretty intense, man. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we can talk a little bit about that. By the way, for those who don't know, tickets are now on sale, so get them now. I'll be honest, that like the trailer is good. I love that like Namor looks like Namor.
It does. It's got the little feet and everything.
I love that we still don't really know exactly what the story is. We have a clue that like. The Talokan people have some sort of beef with Wakanda.
Yeah,
it has to involve like Wakanda opening up their borders.
Yeah,
because now everyone kind of wants a piece of everyone wants a piece of them now.
I wonder if it's going to be like the vibranium that they have was stolen from Talokan or. You know, whatever they're calling Atlantis.
That's a good question. I always suspected that it had either something to do with natural resources or just like a political dispute or maybe just like now that T'Challa is out of the picture, they like the Talokans just see this as an opportunity to attack.
They're like, let's go and annex like a piece of the surface world or something.
Although the actor who plays Namor, let me get his name really quick. The actor Tenacuerta, he admitted that in this movie Namor is not the villain. He's just an antagonist, which kind of got the internet thinking, what if Dr. Doom is behind the scenes?
You know, it could very well be, because it's something that Doom would do. It, you know, he would definitely meddle in other countries' affairs.
And
like the Lord of Latveria.
Yeah, and what better way to introduce Latveria than in a more like politically charged Marvel movie.
And I mean, it is interesting too, because you know, like Wakanda, the first like name check or name drop that we have of the country, even though he mispronounces it, is in Age of Ultron.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And then we had Ulysses Claw in there too.
Yeah.
You know? So they were already planting seeds of the Wakanda, you know, Black Panther connection even before he really appeared. So you could do that with Dr. Doom as well, with Victor Von Doom.
That's the thing that I'm always kind of like, I've always been sort of admiring about the MCU, is that like they will plant seeds like so early in advance that you don't really kind of take it for granted until it actually happens. Like Stephen Strange was name dropped in The Winter Soldier 2 years before solo debut, and then the multiverse was sort of introduced as a concept in Doctor Strange.
Yep.
Now we have like Miss Marvel, and it seems like also Namor is officially going to be a mutant.
Yep.
in the MCU.
I'm not surprised.
Also speaking of X-Men references, Madripoor was dropped in The Falcon and Winter Soldier.
Yep.
So yeah,
I was so hoping we would see like Patch or something in that. I was so hoping for that.
Baby steps.
Yeah, that's something that not a whole lot of people would even know. Like, they wouldn't know that Logan was the non-comic book readers would not know that Wolverine or Logan was actually called Patch, and he hung out in Madripoor, and he was like, you know, almost like a independent contractor, let's say, in his early days.
I think there was an Easter egg in an early She-Hulk episode on a news website where
there was
yep.
the man with the claws at the bar or something. Yeah. Bar fight.
So yeah. they are slowly building out.
They're throwing in little things here and there.
And that's the best approach they could take. Cause I don't think it would be right to just like, you know, to just blindside people with mutants are here.
Yeah.
Without kind of like, you know, dipping their toe into the water first.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, you know, and I know you guys talked about this earlier, but the Deadpool 3 news.
Oh my God, yes.
That came out that just hit like a Mack truck, man. I was so, like, I was having a really bad day. And as soon as I read that, I was like, my God, this makes my day like a million times better already. Just seeing that little video, the two videos now that we have of Ryan Reynolds and Hugh Jackman, and just like, you know, just knowing that it's coming, that team up is going to be just amazing.
My favorite thing about the first video was that Ryan Reynolds like immediately like calls out D23, like, hi,
yes.
sorry we couldn't make it this year, but we've been working hard on Deadpool 3. And then just the way they nonchalantly introduce Hugh Jackman, yeah. Like,
yeah,
hey Hugh, want to come back and play Logan one more time?
Like, yeah, sure, Ryan. As he's walking up the steps, you know, just like it's nothing. Like, sure, no big deal. What I'm really amazed at, though, is the fact that there's some people on the internet that just don't want to have any fun and that want to just look at this like, oh, they're shitting all over Logan's ending or whatever. And it's like, are you even do you guys even hear yourselves? Because first of all, like Mangold himself, James Mangold, the director of Logan, like he came out and said that it's its own thing. Obviously, they're not contradicting anything because it's Deadpool. If Deadpool were in legitimate continuity with the other X-Men films, why would he have seen the younger cast
in that one
Easter egg moment when he's got Colossus and Negasonic walking around, and Colossus and Negasonic were not around for the, you know, the First Class movies. I mean, First Class and, you know, the younger cast movies, I should say.
Like the way I have always imagined Deadpool's, like, Deadpool exists in like a pocket universe.
Exactly.
That's not really bound by any one continuity.
And yet he knows about all the continuities because of the Thanos joke with Cable. I mean, you know, pump the hate brakes, Thanos. I mean, you know, I will say this though. They got to have Dopinder in there. I know that Zazie Beetz is going to come back, hopefully, as Domino, or at least they're in talks to bring her back, which is great. That's great news. I really want Morena Baccarin back as Vanessa. She needs to come back.
Oh, yeah, that's right. She is alive, thanks to time travel.
Yeah, she's alive. He saved her. So, I mean, you want to talk about time travel multiversal shenanigans. I mean, right there. That's Deadpool in a nutshell. So Deadpool is just the movie where you can do anything and get away with it. It's fine. He can have a conversation with Matthew Broderick.
Yeah, exactly. Now, how much do you think the multiverse is going to play into the story? Because
Fred Savage. Was it Fred Savage? Sorry, am I screwing that up? It might've been Fred Savage. Anyway.
Yeah, it's Fred Savage. But how much do you think the multiverse is going to play into this? Because this movie is coming out September 2024, which is kind of in the middle of the multiverse saga. So do you think how much do you think the multiverse will play into the story, because this drops in September of 2024, which is like right in the middle of the multiverse saga.
I think if anything, we're just going to get Deadpool in the MCU. So, or at least adjacent to the MCU. Like, he'll be a part of the multiverse, but he won't exactly be, maybe not part of the MCU proper.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's going to be kind of like the X-Men movies, where he was just kind of like, he was always around, kind of near them, but not necessarily like a part of them.
Yeah. That seems like a good place for him.
I think there's a way to do it, though. Like, you could have him cameo in the mainline MCU movies and just have it be like a fun little cameo.
Oh yeah, like he can be the new Stan Lee cameos.
Yeah, exactly. I always thought that would just be awesome if he were like the new Stan Lee.
And I mean, it's
Deadpool walking in the background, you know.
I mean, we've been seeing it with She-Hulk. It's not like the MCU can't do fourth wall breaks. The difference, though, is She-Hulk as a series is a more suitable vessel than, say, Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, like, I mean, I wouldn't have him, you know, pop up everywhere. But, you know, I mean, you could have him, assuming that if they do Secret Wars, you know, the way that it's been done in the comics, where there's a lot of multidimensional shenanigans happening, a lot of things going on. You might be able to have him pop up in there, but it would have to be like a more PG-13 version of him.
Which is not, it's not necessarily impossible to
it's
do
not
that.
Impossible. No, not at all. I mean, does it in the comics. They do it in the comics all the time.
Yeah. Even like one of the Disney animated shows had an episode where Daredevil made an appearance. And, you know, for a TV Y7 show, They handled Deadpool pretty okay.
Mm-hmm.
But okay, that is...
Could they even name him in that? Because, like, if you're a Y7 show and you say Deadpool...
I don't know how they got away with it, but...
Yeah.
It worked.
I mean, I guess they used to get away with it on the old Batman animated series, so he had some pretty grisly things in that.
True. One thing I do want to see in some capacity... Now that Disney has like all of the Fox characters, is I want there to be some sort of like Daredevil and Spider-Man crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just like, you know, episodes of freshman year, the Spider-Man animated series.
Yeah, Spider-Man. Yeah. The freshman year thing. Yeah, that'd be cool.
Because as great as Deadpool is on his own, He's kind of more fun to have as a foil to another hero.
Definitely. Those have been my favorite, honestly, my favorite versions of Deadpool in the comics is when it's like a Cable and Deadpool kind of a book, or Deadpool loves Spider-Man or something.
and I'm pretty sure that's like exactly what they were thinking writing Deadpool 3.
Yeah, definitely. My God, can you imagine the humor that's going to happen? All the like bromance jokes that are going to happen there.
Oh, they are going to like make so many references to like all of the buddy comedy or just like buddy action movies. Like I need there to be at least one reference to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh, definitely. I would love to hear Wolverine's reaction to like Deadpool just saying like "fuck Wolverine" in the second movie.
Watch like the like the Wolverine's like their first reaction scene. I would love if their first scene was just like Logan just punches him out. Yeah, fuck you. Wade.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know that they're gonna get into some big huge fight and just like eviscerate each other, and it'll be so funny. Oh my God. Yeah, that movie just gives me so much life and hope, honestly. Like, it's the Same. Most, it's so bizarre to say that for a Deadpool movie, but it really does. They know what they're doing for sure.
That they do.
Yep. All right. We have anything else?
I think that's good for now. This is a nice, cool, laid back podcast. We haven't really done a free for all in a while.
Yeah, we haven't done one of these in a long time, man. And hopefully we can get more of the crew in on the next one. But you have anything coming up, or have you seen any movies that you really like lately? I mean, what's been going on with you, Mike? Let's end with that.
Well, most recently, I saw Michael Dougherty's Trick or Treat for the first time in theaters.
Nice. Oh, yeah, for the first time in theaters. That's right. It was one of those, like, I think, was it even like a Blockbuster exclusive? Because I seem to remember
I don't know about, I don't know about Blockbuster, but it was on the shelf for like 2 years. And then in 2009, Warner put it out on home video through their Warner Premiere imprint. And then, it sadly never really got a wide theatrical release outside of like film festivals.
Yeah. It should have. It was really good.
But I'm happy that we finally get to see that on the big screen, even if it's like in limited capacity. My next kind of like bucket list theatrical trip is gonna be John Carpenter's The Thing, celebrating its 40th anniversary.
Nice.
And then of course, like some smaller releases coming out this year. There's some positive reviews for the film Lyle Crocodile, which is it's a bizarre adaptation, but it's a musical from the writers of La La Land and The Greatest Showman, with Shawn Mendes as the voice of the crocodile. It's a weird mix, but I've heard some pretty good things.
I wasn't expecting that. All right.
And then for my next big theatrical film, which we'll probably talk about on the next Capes, Black Adam, October 21st. Super excited to see that.
Yeah, that looks good.
What about you? Anything that you're looking forward to in the world of entertainment?
Definitely Black Adam. I'm very much looking forward to even that Violent Night movie looks cool.
Yeah.
It looks so schlocky. I gotta admit, that looks fun. What else is coming out? Of course, Werewolf by Night. I can't wait to see that. I'm probably gonna be up anyway, so I'll probably watch it tonight. Or overnight. For me, I think, I've been kind of going back and playing the Batman Arkham games.
Oh, nice.
Because Gotham Knights is coming out at the end of the month, so on October 25th. So I'm curious to see how that one matches up or measures up against the old Arkham series. Arkham Origins, you know, played through it again after many, many years. And that was pretty fun. It's, I would say, the lower tier Arkham game, you know, because it's not made by the same team. It's not made by Rocksteady. It's made by WB Montreal, who are also doing Gotham Knights. But I think in terms of the story, I really enjoyed it. And in terms of, like, you know, they did a pretty decent job, even though it was basically an kind of a prequel game. So, you know, they had some different voice actors and stuff. I still say Troy Baker did a good Joker. I still enjoyed his version of it. It was very Mark Hamill-esque, but it was good.
Yeah, he does a very solid Mark Hamill impression.
Yeah, not bad. Now I'm playing Arkham Asylum for the first time in, like, how long has it been? Almost 10 years now?
About.
I feel like it's been almost 10 years. So that's been a lot of fun. And actually, like, I'm playing it on PC. I'm playing it through Steam. And it's playing better than Arkham Origins. So that's interesting to notice. Maybe it's because it's the, you know, I don't know if it's the remastered edition of it. But graphically, it's just so good. It's really smooth. Like, Rocksteady, they knew what they were doing with those games. So
nice.
So Asylum's pretty fun, and definitely a worthy Batman game. It was the Batman game to kind of, like, bring everything back on track and to be like, okay, this is how we're going to do superhero games in this era. So that was cool. I've also been playing a lot of Cyberpunk, of course. So that's been fun, you know, infinite money glitch. That's always good. Also, a weird game to enjoy, but I like listening to podcasts and like long videos and stuff and just playing this in the background. Power Wash Simulator.
Interesting.
It's just a game where you have no enemies, no nothing. It's just power washing things. And, you know, everything's covered in dirt and grime and mud. And then by the end of it, you just see your work. It's been done. I don't know. I have the sneaking suspicion that it's just a game to get us used to doing like really menial tasks. And like, you know, it's a capitalist sim basically, but like, it's a capitalist conspiracy to get us to all do menial labor. But it's a lot of fun and it's very relaxing. And it's just, you know, you don't even have to hold the trigger. You just press a button and the thing will just go for you. And you just point it to where you want it power washed. It's a good time. And like I said, you know, it's a way to keep your, if you want to play games or something and you also want to listen to like, you know, a podcast like ours, for instance, you can just have this thing on and just power wash to your heart's content while you listen to us ramble on and on. So that's been fun. And, you know, apart from that, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they do next with Andor, which is another show that I've been enjoying.
Same.
This episode was a little bit slow for me, but that's okay.
Yeah, they're right in the middle of setting up a big a big action set piece. Yeah. One thing I really like about Andor so far is it feels like a visual adaptation of a lot of like the Star Wars novels.
It does.
You know, the books have gotten more into like the politics of things, and
yeah,
they've been really good at like really like giving like full like round characters to people on both sides of
I see that. I can see that for sure. Curious to see where it goes.
Same. And I'm glad to hear that season two is already like on its way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's when you know like that Lucasfilm has faith in what they got.
And what did they say this was like 5 years before the Battle of Yavin, right?
Yeah. So like
so you could conceivably do maybe 4 seasons of this or 5 seasons of this if you wanted to.
Theoretically.
Theoretically, I think, yeah.
I think like the first season is like 12 episodes, and then another 12 covering like another chunk of time, and so like somewhere around 3 to 4 seasons leading up to Rogue One would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see that happening. It's interesting to see Andor as like a younger, more brash and impetuous sort of guy, you know, like by the time you see him in Rogue One, he's kind of like he's already, you know, he's there. He knows what it's like to work with a group and stuff, and he knows he's had to do terrible things for the cause and all that, you know. So he's kind of fully formed. So it's interesting to see this kind of version of him where he's not so confident in himself.
Yeah, I like that we're getting more, we're getting more layers from Andor in this series.
Yeah,
and also definitely. It's just kind of fun to see the very primitive version of the rebellion kind of in an early stage.
Yeah, like the fact that they didn't really trust each other all that much. Kind of interesting. Like, you never knew which one was like an Imperial spy or, you know.
Like something that this show is doing that most other Star Wars properties haven't done yet is like we only know the romanticized version of the rebellion. We don't really know the gritty kind of early early like weirdness of like an entire group kind of coming together against the Empire.
The murkier aspects of it.
Exactly.
And yeah, like, you know, like them just kind of trying to steal like Imperial money, essentially. Like that's what this heist is, you know.
Yeah,
trying to hit them in the pocketbook, so to speak.
even Mon Mothra gets a lot of development. Like,
yeah,
we have never seen her family before. Like,
her family is interesting. Yeah, definitely. Like, I can see that dude, her husband, is definitely some kind of Imperial sympathizer guy. Like, he totally is.
He's probably like the Star Wars equivalent of like a centrist. No wonder she wants to jump, like, kickstart the rebellion. Like, this is the shit she has to deal with at home.
He'll appease them. He'll appease the Imperials just because they could let him be rich, you know? They let him keep his riches and stuff and live his comfortable life. He's like a Benedict Arnold figure in a way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. He's totally going to sell her out or try to sell her out or something.
And that's why I don't trust him.
And then Stellan Skarsgård is going to come in there and just kill him. Or something. That was one of the best moments, by the way. It was when, like, Andor caught him with, like, Luthen right behind him or something. And Luthen's like, I'll kill him. Yeah. Andor's like, I'm not going to kill you. And Luthen's like, oh, I will.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about a lot in this episode. We covered a lot. I think, so overall, yay or nay, just to put it in a nutshell here, yay or nay for the Mario movie trailer?
That's a yay.
I agree. It's a yay from me, too. All right. So, Mike, this has been a lot of fun. Where can everybody find you?
So you guys can find me on Twitter at CaptainK42. You can check out my quick thoughts on letterboxd.com/CoachK42. And you can follow Renegade Pop Culture on Facebook and Twitter at Ren Pop Culture. Keanu, where can everyone find you before I do the rest of the spiel?
On Twitter at Keona Tang. That's KEONATANG. And that's basically where I post all my stuff nowadays. So
awesome. And if you want to hear more of our thoughts on various media, you can follow us on all of the podcast places, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. We're also on Podchaser, on YouTube, on the Banana Meter, and everything can be found at renegadepopculture.com. Need an escape? So do we. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Renegade Free-for-All. We will catch you guys later.
All done.
Peace out.